Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the HR Leaders Podcast, the show where we explore the future of work with industry experts and HR executives in the world's leading global brands. Super excited about today's episode. We're joined by Wanda, which is one of my favorite names, by the way. Since we last spoke, I'm like, that name is just, I want to call you Wonder Woman, but we'll get into that because
right,
of all the great things
I'm
that you
okay
do.
With that.
Wanda Cole Freeman, who's the Senior Vice President of Talent Acquisition at Common Spirit Health. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing terrific. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you too. Tell me a little bit more about you personally and sort of your journey to where we are now.
Yeah, well, I'm an oldest child. I don't know why that always grounds me. The oldest child. There are five siblings. Grew up on the East Coast in the U.S. And really, I feel really fortunate to have gone to boarding school for high school, really opened my horizon. Actually, books started it. I was always a really avid reader. And so kind of reading was my escape and just gave me a sense of the world that was beyond what I knew. So fortunate to go to boarding school in Maryland, went to Barnard College in, at Columbia University in New York City. I had a fantastic time being a young person in New York. Loved the way Barnard integrated the city into learning. It was really wonderful. Quite frankly, thought I was going to go to law school, but really needed a break. And the only way I could afford to stay in New York City was to get a great job at either a consulting firm or investment banking. So I actually went to work for J.P. Morgan right after college. You know, I always joke, if I wanted five roommates, I could have done something else. But I was kind of done with that after being in boarding school since 14 and then in college. So worked at J.P. Morgan as a junior banker on the investment banking side. Really was an experience that I would never, like, at the moment I thought, okay, it's a paycheck, it sounds interesting, but it's probably one of the best things that I ever did. It really forced me outside my comfort zone. I'd never even taken an econ class in college. So here I was working on pretty big deals and learning a lot about businesses and how they grow and develop. And so that was fantastic. Got to live for a short period of time in Geneva on an assignment. It was just amazing. And from there, I got really involved in college recruiting, going back to my alma mater and some historically Black colleges and universities. And randomly, that is how I got into HR. Kind of stumbled into it.
I love starting the show with this because you're like, you never know, you know, if I was investment banker to HR, just like you go like, just, and everyone's always like, everyone's career is different, but this is a new one for me. I've heard some interesting one.
It actually makes a lot of sense. A lot of investment banking is about building relationships, understanding business needs, understanding your clients, and HR is all about people and relationship building and understanding what's needed, where the gaps are from a human capital standpoint. So it was actually quite a natural transition, you know, and I'm glad that I had the opportunity to do the banking part and learn it, because it's really helped me as I bring in senior level executives across industries throughout my career, and now specifically at Common Spirit Health. So I give a lot of credit to that first 3.5 years that I spent at J.P. Morgan doing banking.
I want to take a step back for a second, because, you know, one thing that still stuck with me from our first conversation, which I feel like we share in common in some respects, is you was talking about, and obviously, you know, correct me if I misquote this, you know, your mum was a strong figure. She worked 3-4 jobs, I think you said before, growing up. You've got, did you say family of five brothers and sisters?
Yeah.
Or did I make that up? Yeah, as well. How did that shape you and that, you know, to where you are now?
Well, first and foremost, I'm fortunate to say I just left my mom. I was with her back east, helping her out on a few things this week. So it's great. And she's such a huge influence in my life. I think who she is and how she loved us and taught us to believe in ourselves and to bet on ourselves. And I know that sounds odd, but to know that you've got to put in the work, and you put in the work and you work hard and you lead with integrity and you give back and you think about not just what you're going to get out of a situation, was always kind of my mom, you know, think about how you can be impactful. And so all of those little kernels and watching her do it you know, watching her work as a tailor at a men's clothing store, and in order to make sure we had enough to get through working at, you know, 7-Eleven or seasonally working at Macy's, or she's an amazing seamstress tailor. And so she would make clothes for everyone, whether it's prom dresses or wedding dresses or, you know, you name it. She's just super talented. And so understanding that she was just such a hard worker, and that, you know, you had to work hard to get ahead. And she instilled that enough. I mean, early on, I remember being like in grade school, and she said, you know, I would come home and say, you know, what's your homework? And if she'd be like, if you said you had to read a book, and they said, read the first couple chapters, she's like, no, read the whole book tonight. Like, why read the whole book? That's crazy. No. Read the whole book. You need to be able to show up prepared, always being prepared. So that, I think, was helpful, and it always is, those lessons. She's someone that she's like a touchstone. I think she's one of my biggest cheerleaders, but she's also in my board of directors. I go to her for a lot. And then I think being the oldest, wanting to set an example to give my siblings something to know that, you know, they could look forward to. They could strive. They could do whatever they wanted was really important for me. So I don't know. I live with it every day. I hope that I pass this my mom's work ethic on to my kids and other people I touch. Yeah, she's still got a lot of energy. She works the night shift still today. And I'd
love
glad
to meet her. She sounds amazing.
Yeah, she's an amazing human. I have a lot. I credit her with a lot. That's who I am.
No, I love it. She sounds like an incredible woman. I'd love to meet her one day. Like, and again, it stuck with me. Even you, our last conversation, you when you were talking about your mom, the experiences, like, I could feel it even through the lens or the Zoom, and how that shaped you of where you are now. Because not only she was just saying it, she embodied it, right, in every single way, you know, work effort. You saw it as a child growing up, the hard work, what it took to do that, and that changes you and your perspective of how things do. And my older brother was that for me. So when it came time, my mom was a single parent with four kids. So when it came time that he could literally legally get a job, like the moment his national insurance card came in the post, because we have like the national insurance number you need to get a job when you're like 16 or whatever it is. He was so excited to go out and earn and help the family. And I was like, all right, I'm next. Like, you know, he got a job as in a kitchen. Then he worked his way up to a chef. And I was like, wow, like, we can do it. We don't have to be poor. Like, and it sounds like we don't have to be poor. Like, and I remember coming home and like getting my first paycheck and being like, seeing £1,000 and being like, I just, you know, just couldn't believe it. I remember like going to the cash machine and just typing the numbers in, being like, oh wow, like, I can do this, you know. And he set a good example for me to be able to, and then kind of ripple down the family, that we don't have to choose to be where we are. We can do something about it, which was a big deal at the time. So from investment banking to where you are now, what did you learn in sort of the investment banking space that has helped you in executive recruiting be successful?
I think understanding people and being able to listen for what's important in investment banking, you know, especially when you're working on a deal, understanding what those levers are, what you need to pull, what you need to push, so that we can come to a solution. And so I think that is really helpful for me today as I work with a large team of talent acquisition folks. And then, of course, you can imagine everyone in the company is our client. Anytime that there's a hiring need, we've got about 17,000, almost 18,000 openings right now. We got a lot of clients internally. But being able to listen to people, understand what motivates them and what their needs are, and hopefully being able to respond. And I think that's probably the biggest thing I learned in investment banking. And I think that's been really helpful for me throughout my career. So that's one. And I think, again, just being able to distill information quickly and understanding people's why, what motivates them, being able to listen, being able to hopefully get to a place of influence. And that's all about building trust, right? You've got to have trust in any relationship. And so investment banking really was key in that.
Yeah, I love that. it's interesting because what you're describing isn't the traditional skills that are taught within people that are traditionally in your role. That isn't in the masters or whatever training course is taken. That's something that you've accumulated over many years, and it's transferable, of course, into something completely different. Is that something you try to instill within your team?
Yeah, I think that obviously there are some rules, of course, specifically in healthcare and of course finance too, where you need to have certain degrees or certain certificates and certain training. But I'm a person who believes most people can be taught those things. I think that what's most important for me when I'm thinking about hiring or my team is hiring is what's their potential, what's their runway, those soft skills, how can they influence, how can they build trust, clearly integrity. That's what I look for when I'm looking to bring on a team. And I'm so proud of a team that I get to work alongside every day. That they excel at that. They excel at those, you know, I'm putting in air quotes, soft skills. I can teach somebody.
I love the fact that you put them in air quotes, by the way, because they're kind of the most critical now. We used to call them soft skills, exactly. Hard skills, but now we're talking about leading with empathy, and we're talking about all of these things. Exactly. weren't even on the list of the core competencies, you know, even just a few years ago.
People could become a leader just because they had a great book of business, not because they had the ability to lead. And so I did put it in air quotes purposely because.
No, I get it.
Those things for me have always been important. I'll quote the CHRO and friend Daryl Robinson, who I work for today. He says that everyone deserves a great leader, a great manager. And it's true. Yes, of course, you have to be competent in what you do and you have to understand, and you have to keep yourself, your skills up. But the most important thing today, I think, is how we lead, how we inspire, how we engage. Because I think when people feel like they can come to work, be their authentic self, bring ideas forward, aren't afraid to fail, that's when they're going to be at their best. And I think that's when teams deliver their best work.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure no one listening is going to disagree with you, but it's easier said than done, right? How do you approach that? How do we ensure that every team has a great leader, or every individual, sorry, has a great leader? How do you weave that into the process and the why and the values of the business?
Yeah, well, we have 150,000 people at Cotton Spirit Health.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean.
Yeah. It's a job that never ends, Chris. Clearly, it starts with our mission, right? Absolutely trying to, as much as possible, identify team members and associates who connect with our mission, our vision, and our values. Being a faith-based health system, we're very committed to making sure that we can provide access to high-quality care across this nation. And we often talk about not just getting folks who, you know, check the boxes from a competency standpoint, but their head is in it, their heart is in it, and their hands are in it. And so I think that's the first piece, right? We have to start with the attraction piece and building our value proposition for what it's going to be like to be here. And then as we grow our leaders in that organization, we have to continue to create that culture of excellence, that culture of compassion. And for us, particularly, we talk about human kindness. And so obviously we have training sessions. We have real conversations with each other. We try to build that trust. Things that help us measure that is our engagement surveys and pulse surveys that we do throughout the year. Our retention, you know, all of those things are, there's not one, you know, one element of anything that I think one does, but it's a collection of things that an organization, I think, has to have. And I think first and foremost, it's just making sure that from top to bottom, the folks who are there for the right reason and not connecting them with your mission, whatever that is. And I feel Cotton Spirit where I am, right now, we've got an amazing mission. People doing awesome work across this organization to help people when they're at their most vulnerable. And then the work that we're doing around population health and health equity is so inspiring and, quite frankly, vital to the health of this country. So that's the way we try to do it here at Cotton Spirit. On my own team, I try to instill that. I also try to recognize people when we have small wins.
This episode of the HR Leaders Podcast was brought to you by our friends at Achievers.
2/3 of employees have 1 foot out the door in 2024, and the top reason to job hunt? Better compensation. But money isn't everything. The Achievers 2024 Engagement and Retention Report reveals that employees crave emotional salary too. What does emotional salary mean? And what are the ways to increase emotional salary to engage and retain top talent? Learn more about motivating your employees beyond just pay by visiting achievers.com/HR leaders. Again, that's achievers.com/HR leaders. Let's get back to the episode.
Some big ones. I think we don't celebrate enough. So just trying to also have people know that you care about them for who they are and get to know them and have them understand you. And I know people use this a lot, but I do think it's about being an approachable and vulnerable leader. I think helps build that.
So many great points there. And one that I want to add, because I've been asked this quite a few recently, do you link that also to compensation?
We have goals, actually. We have targets for our incentives, and we have financial and operational goals. And one of the metrics on our goals is employee engagement. Obviously, everything's weighted, but yeah. And then we also now have a cultural score that we get periodically, and it's leading with my culture, our culture. And so it's a collection of things from diversity and inclusion on your team. It's how you promote people.
But it makes up a part of how they're compensated. Yeah, so they have to tick those boxes too. Okay, good. That's a great thing. And there's so many companies that are doing all the things that you're talking about, but that's a part that I feel like they do all of those things, but then their KPIs and compensation don't match. They're not driving the outcomes, if that makes sense. Pulling in two different directions.
And I definitely don't take credit for that. I think, obviously our executive leadership team, our CHRO, our board, really believe in it as well. And so I think that we have a lot of board support as well as support our executive team. So our teams are encouraged and lifted up by that because, as you said, it's in our metrics.
Yeah, love that. You want to go back to your team for a second, because I know you really focus and emphasize on the prioritizing the well-being of your own team, especially over the last 2 years. It's always been tough, but now it's been really tough in the last 2 years. And you mentioned some really cool things that you do, which I think you already know what I'm referring to. So you could walk us through some of the activities and things you have in place with your team to make sure you're connected and that you're focusing on prioritizing well-being.
Yeah, absolutely. And we touched on this definitely when we spoke before, because I do feel it's really important that wellness isn't just about physical wellness, but it's also about emotional and mental wellness, about your financial health. It's a myriad of things. I think we've all been, oftentimes people are in their bedrooms now doing their work at their dining room table. So it's hard to separate work from home now, especially with so many of us being at home. So some of the things that we started doing, and actually one thing I can't take credit for, I continue to do, but actually someone on my team suggested that I do it. And I started writing a blog. And so every Sunday, I write a blog called Our New Normal. This was, I think, the third week of COVID on lockdown, I started this blog. And I kept them all because it's almost like this really cathartic thing where I share what's going on. I have empathy with them. I tell them, there were some dark days during COVID for us as well.
So is a blog that goes just to your team, or is this external well? Just purely personal
just
to your team?
I send it to my team. Yeah, really personal to my team, and oftentimes really personal to me, quite frankly.
Yeah.
During that summer when we had kind of civil unrest and racial violence, I have a young Black son. So sometimes I would talk about that and those challenges, having them take care of themselves. So I do the blog. And from time to time, each week, sometimes I'm thinking, maybe I should stop writing this. Maybe no one wants to hear from me. And then I get a nice email. Thank you. I needed that. So I often put inspirational quotes or things that I get a lot from Buddhist teachings as well. And I just try to, whether it's photos from me going hiking or getting to spend time, which was rare, in person with people during COVID safely, just really talking about what we're all feeling and that juggling. And oftentimes it's really stressing that they have to prioritize themselves. We also have something that I love and look forward to every Wednesday, Wellness Wednesday. So for 15 minutes, top of the morning, 8 a.m., we, whether it's folks from our team or they procure other people, we've had everything from meditation to musical chairs to making Play-Doh art, Zumba classes, weightlifting and chair yoga, you name it. Little kids, the best one was when, it's actually done it, I think, three times now, where kids from, whether it's grandkids or kids from the team out on holiday, they have actually pulled us jokes and did like a little comedy 15 minutes. So cute. It is the cutest thing. And every time I ask for a call for what people want, we love getting the kids back. So we've done that. And then the last thing that I would highlight, in addition to trying to do, you know, Zoom parties and, you know, again, sending thank you notes and care packages and all of that stuff that we try to do. One of the things that came back from our pulse survey, which we do quarterly and randomly, was that people were really feeling like they couldn't get the tasks that no one wants to get done in their job. They just couldn't, they didn't have time to get that stuff done. And so they were doing it at night or on the weekends. And so while I can't do it every day, one day a week, everyone's calendar is blocked for an hour and it's called our focus hour. And so we ask folks to not accept meetings, don't ask for meetings on our team, and to really honor that time so that people can try to focus. You know, there's really no, as I said, work separation. I call it now work integration, right? How do you integrate work into your family life or family into your work life? And so we, so those are the top three things that I think we've been doing in addition to just trying to lift each other up and continue to love on each other and support each other, whether it's through silly chats, through IM on Google Chat, or, you know, text messages that we send to each other, just being there for each other, whatever that means, has been really helpful for our team of about 220 or so people.
I'm conscious of time, but I just also wanted, like, how has like hybrid affected your team? Is it helped accelerate that because you now have a broader segment of talent to go after because you're no longer perhaps looking in a traditional sense of where we are? Like, how has that shifted the mindset and strategy?
It definitely has helped us. We had been, even though we were a centralized recruitment function, we created that when we came together. We were still, in a lot of ways, still very much geographically anchored around our hospitals and our medical groups, right? And our corporate centers. So we had people who were embedded in various hospitals and such. And that was all great. And people came together. But it meant that there was a mentality of our leaders, of our business, that we had to be in that location. If you were supporting San Andreas Hospital, which is in, you know, the Central Valley, we had to be there. And now with COVID, we can hire people everywhere, which also has helped us because, you know, some of the locations that we're in are quite expensive, and it meant that we can't compete with, you know, just thinking about the Bay Area, the high tech companies of the world, the biotech. And so being able to find great talent in other geos has been definitely helpful. The war on talent is really a war. Like, I am not going to pretend it's not, but that definitely has helped us for sure. But we definitely are still seeing major shortages and quite frankly, a lot of demand for all sorts of positions. So the struggle is real, but it's definitely helped us.
But it does come back to your point earlier, though, which is, I think, a big strength, clearly, is people... I've seen the shift in conversation I'm having when I'm recruiting. In the past, it was very, you know, traditional around how much you're going to get paid. Whereas now the first questions I'm getting around is around flexibility, is around well-being, is around learning, is around those are the things, the why.
Career and development. Sorry,
the aligning their why and purpose, right? Your career is almost at the end is some of the traditional things that we talk about. And I've had friends that have taken pay cuts because they don't want to live that lifestyle anymore because they had a lot of time think over the last 2 years and think, it's not worth it. I want to be able to pick up my daughter from school. I want to pick up my daughter from school. I want to, you know, be there. be around, be a more present father, husband, mother, etc. And I want to do something that when I wake up energizes me. And you have such a strong purpose and mission with your own organization. That's where you can, you know, play to, right? As opposed to, if it's about competing for salary, then this is probably not the right place for that person anyway. That's really what's the most important to them.
Oh, Chris, we'd love for you to tell every recruit that.
Yeah, listen.
No, but in all seriousness, even before COVID, though, again, I just keep going back to our mission, and an extension of our mission is our human kindness brand. And so we have been on the Heritage Dignity Health side, which was the organization I joined, both, you know, and then we, of course, merged with Catholic Health Initiative. Both organizations have always been focused on compassion. And then Dignity Health has expanded that, obviously, to now our organization, Common Spirit. And so human kindness, we actually have human kindness workshops, as we do for patient experience. It's a really important piece of the fabric of who we are. And so I think that's really great. So one of the things that we do just in our recruiting effort is that working with our mission and integration team, as well as other leaders out in the organization, we came up with behavioral-based questions that are focused on our mission and focused on human kindness. And so in the interview process, we ask people questions. And it's really telling. People are sometimes often taken aback with some of the questions that we ask. One example is, who taught you kindness and how do you use it in your professional life daily?
Yeah, I can't imagine they've ever been asked that before, ever.
Yeah,
I'm taken back by that. When you just said that, I was like, whoa. You have to take a few minutes there, don't you, to really process that.
You have to think about it, right? And think about when you know, so much of recruitment is a relationship, right? Just like you said in the beginning. And it's not just about us assessing the candidate. It's about the candidate assessing, is this the right place for them also? So we want them to be happy. We want them to feel like this is a place that they're going to feel they're filled with purpose and mission. And they're going to be the rose every day. I mean, so much of what I personally do is nowhere near what our frontline workers do, right? From our transporters to our patient registers, to our, of course, our nurses, our phlebotomists, you name it, our pharmacists, can't even touch it. So much respect for what they do every day. But, you know, I am fueled by, we need to have practices from a recruitment perspective. I need to lead as a leader that inspires people to not cut corners, to think about, are they connected to our mission? Do they meet the requirements that we need as an organization to advance our mission? And ultimately, it's so key, because at the heart of everything we do is a patient. You know, that's my why all the time. It's like, that's why I get up, to make sure that we're doing it. It's like, if we have an issue with our background check vendor, it's a huge issue for me, because I think I want to make sure that everyone we hire meets our standards and exceeds our standards, right? Because if we make a mistake, it can be costly. And it's not about, we missed something in the OIG. It's about, there was a patient who could have been impacted. I have to say, I have had a really extensive journey being able to work in investment banking. I spent some time at Apple and high tech and looking at executive search firms, where I really kind of got to hone executive search and how do we do that. But I have to say, having made the shift 13, 14 years ago to healthcare, first working with a nonprofit payer, and then moving over to the provider side, has really rounded out my career in a way that I have to, every day I'm excited to get up and do my work. And my other jobs were obviously engaging and interesting, but we all know this, if we don't have our health, we don't have anything. So
it puts things in perspective. Yeah.
Yeah, like, it really does.
I was speaking to, I'm not going to mention his name because he might not want me to, but let's just say he's one of the top 100 richest people in Miami. Let's just say that, multi-billionaire. Mm-hmm. And he said to me something the other day which stuck with me. And he said, he was talking about money and happiness related back to that. And he said to me, I have all the money in the world, Chris, but I couldn't stop my wife from dying of cancer, right? And I was just took me back for a second. And they're talking about the, you know, wealth is health, your health is wealth, however you want to put it. And that really put things into perspective. Even myself personally, you know, only what, 2-3 weeks ago, I couldn't breathe because of side effects of COVID. And I spent 2 weeks barely being able to walk. Not walk as in physically, I mean, I would walk and get out of breath just walking around the house or talking.
Yeah.
And I was like, I felt helpless. I felt so vulnerable. And it made me kind of go, I really need to focus. Like, obviously, that wasn't my fault. but it made me think, it did make me think, I'm going to start training more, get healthier, eat healthier. Just kind of just put everything in perspective. I was like, so for you to wake up every day knowing that what you do and every decisions that you and the team are making are impacting lives of millions of people, there's, I don't think it gets much stronger than that in terms of the purpose.
Think something that you said that I think that Common Spirit Health is really focused on, and I'm not sure if you saw, but we have an initiative with More Health School of Medicine that we are calling the More in Common Alliance to get more brown and black doctors in health systems, right, and trained and out in the field. But and then we've got Dr. Alicia Cole, who is helping to lead some of our health equity work with her teams, and of course looking in all of our various divisions. But you know, wealth is health in the U.S., and that's an unfortunate thing. And so we need to make sure, as we think about the paradigm of healthcare in the U.S., how can we make it more equitable? And so we've got a whole initiative around health equity, and it's one of our pillars. I'm really proud of some of the work that we're doing there because, again, as I said, everyone should have a great leader. Everyone should have access to great health and healthcare. So I'm really excited about a lot of the work that our teams are doing to create equity in the healthcare space in the 21 states that we're in.
Amazing. Well, look, thanks so much for coming on the show. It's
like
you were meant to be in this role. Right? You know, when you just kind of speak to people, right? And like,
I have to say, I do feel like I have the role that, I love. Like, I love it. I love everything. I love people. I love helping people. I love helping businesses grow. And at the end of the day, people are the key to that. And yeah, we can have machines and AI and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, somebody's got to create that. Somebody's got to develop that. And human connection is going to be so important. And so, I do. I feel, my mom says, don't say you feel lucky, say you feel blessed. And I agree. I feel blessed that I landed here. I'm blessed about this journey. And I hope that I can continue on to keep this going.
Well, I think that's a good place to end it. I appreciate you. I appreciate the work you're doing. Your team are doing, as you said, you're just one of, you know, thousands of people that make this happen. It's all about the team as well. And I wish you all the best until we next speak. But I appreciate you sharing your story and journey with everyone and coming on the show.